On today's Compassion Radio.
You just don't stand up there. You're dead. I was mad at him. Pete has a lot of experience too. He's been shot at by everything. Rifle, machine gun, rocket launcher, airplane, mortars. He's got drone, everything. He knows his business. I know he's brave, but this is like foolish. Dad, he's wounded. That's all he said. And he turned back and started pulling him out. And I just was stricken. My son is about to get killed helping him. But then also I felt ashamed that I was down there and he was up there. You know, my fear never went away, but my son's in it. I'm in it with him.
There comes a time in all our lives when we'll probably have to make life and death decisions. Some of us more often than others. For the Eubank family of the Free Burma Rangers, it's a daily affair. And so far, God has seen fit to keep them alive, to keep doing life-saving, soul-saving work on the literal front lines of conflict zones around the world. If you didn't catch the first moving episode in this series, make sure to stop by CompassionRadio.com to stream the podcast. The programs are titled Shame, Surrender, and the Presence of God, Free Burma Rangers. Today is part two of that series, and we'll pick it up where we left off yesterday as Dave humbly asks us to pray for two men that he loves dearly.
I have two prayer requests. I have a guy that saved me in the Battle of Mosul twice in gunfight. I was out in the street. ISIS came around the corner, shot my friend six times, shot me once in the arm. I'm able to stop the three guys in front of me, but I can't move because there's more ISIS, and I'm yelling, somebody help me. And Justin, a guy named Justin, came running out, ex-Marine, atheist, helped me pull Lieutenant Hussein off the street. Two times, another time I'm trapped in a vehicle. It's all shot up. We're surrounded. He brought another armored vehicle up, chained me up, and pulled me out. But Justin so far does not follow Jesus. And he hears this. He knows I ask people to pray for him. I love him so much. So please pray for Justin to follow Jesus. He's a brave man. Number two, a guy named Yazoo. Yazoo's in Burma. Last year, he was evacuating wounded out of a battle space. Machine guns are shooting. Mortars are landing. He's the last guy out and hit by gunfire and mortar. He has shrapnel all through his body and hits the ground. And he can't move. And he yells for help, and nobody hears him. Everybody's gone. Everybody thinks he's ahead. And a voice says, ask God to help you. And Yazoo, who's also kind of a non-religious guy, doesn't. The second time, ask God to help you. He does nothing. The third time, this voice comes to him and says, Yazoo, ask God to help you. And he goes, God, help me. And when he says that, suddenly one of our guys comes back and sees him. And the guy came back and said, I don't know why I went back. We're all gone. We've got to keep running. But something made me go back. And I went back and I saw Yazoo. I yelled for help. We pulled him off the battle before the Burma Army took the whole place over. Yazoo is treated, takes a lot of surgeries, gets the shrapnel out. He's still got scars in his ear and his face and his chest, but he's 100% fine. He's back in action. My daughter, Suzanne, contacts the next day. What happened to Yazoo? What do you mean? At 3 in the morning, I was woken up at Texas A&M. Pray for Yazoo three times. So this year, when Yazoo and Suzanne met, they hugged each other because she sent him the story. They were communicating over Starlink. So Yazoo called for help. And my daughter, halfway around the world in Texas, was woken up to pray for him. Now, Yazoo has not yet become a baptized believer, but he believes God is real. So I wanted to finish those two stories. Pray for Yazoo to take the next step. Pray for Justin.
Yazoo and Justin. A thought comes to mind while you're telling the stories about those who have encountered and have surrendered, I guess the word we would use within the church, to the call of Jesus on their lives, saying, I have you, but I want you. The Spirit pursues us in that way because he wants to love on us. That grace always seems to be so insulting to the shame. We sometimes get so mad because God doesn't agree with us that we deserve all this garbage because of what we've done. And he keeps coming back at us and challenging and negating the shame we think we're so entitled to. I think about the power of the absolution that happens throughout so many Christian traditions where we confess our sins together corporately and separately, and we absolve each other officially. The body has been deputized for this very purpose, not to condemn and to add to your shame, but to literally see it and say, it's the shame that's got to go because the sin's already gone away. It's in the past, but you're stuck in it. God says, I'm going to free you now, in this moment. We don't often give a whole lot of credence to the power of absolution of sin within the body of Christ and how incredible it is that you and I get to be not just the witnesses of it, but the instrument of it in other people's lives that are right around us, telling them the truth about what God knows about them, what he says about them, and what he will do for them. And that means for me. I think, described it so well. You've got your Kung Fu Panda one that's already crossed that line and accepted it with big heart, and you've got Justin and Yazoo, who are just beginning to be softened by the persistent pounding of God's forgiveness. And yet the shame demon still sits there on their shoulder, reminding them of what they have done, not who they are. It's so hard to say, this thing, this calling, this ask me to help you is a real relationship. They're already seen by God, being used by God. They're already following him, but they don't experience the joy of it yet, I think is what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah, we need to be praying for Justin, for Yazoo, and for everybody.
Thank you for remembering their names. Wow, I'm just listening to you going, thank you, Lord, thank you.
It helps to be taking some notes on the side here while I'm talking to you. So. But yes, I want to remind our Compassion Radio listeners that if you've heard those names, Yazoo and Justin, these are men that are not just on the front lines, they're in the trenches. They've been with Jesus on the cross, is what I would say, experiencing the kind of suffering that comes from laying down your life for somebody else. Because of the faithful witness and leadership of people like David Eubank, they're out there becoming Jesus on this earth without even realizing the transformation that's even happening now. And you want to see them complete the deal, to be covenanted right into that family in a way where they know they have a birthright, and they know they have a heritage, they know they have a legacy with Jesus on this earth, and an inheritance to grab a hold of here and thereafter. There's so much to be thankful for and joyful for if we really accept not just that Jesus is promising these things, but that it is a functional reality of all that is. That this is the way God intends for us to experience all of his being and all of his creation and all of our identity. It's in him.
Yes. I'm so grateful for you. Thank God. Wow, what a trumpet of love and freedom you have. Thank you.
Well, other people will look at your life and say, I hear a trumpet. It sure sounds like a battle call. And in some ways, it always is for you. But I've never seen you to be the one that raises a trumpet of alarm to send people to their deaths out of fear. You seem to have a strange amount of courage in following others in there scared to death and walked right over that fear into helping people and seeing God literally spare your lives. And so far, God has chosen to spare you and Pete, your son, standing up for Jesus and in his covering, as David would say, the covering came upon me. You're willing to shout the thing that is from the heart of God.
Thank you.
When your own son, in his anger, can stand up and say, God, your son is wounded here.
Yeah.
I will not leave him. And calling out to his own father saying, come help me.
Yeah. 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 I was already down at the edge of the trench. Everybody was in the trench. We have a lot of experience with this kind of thing. You just don't stand up there. You're dead. And he's just up there alone, pulling on him. And then actually one of my guys went around to help him in the backside. I was mad at him. Pete has a lot of experience too. He's been shot at by everything. Rifle, machine gun, rocket launcher, airplane, mortars. Pete's got drone, everything. He knows his business. I know he's brave, but this is like foolish. Get out of there, man. And that horror and desperation and also judgment on me. Dad, he's wounded. That's all he said. And he turned back and started pulling him out. And I just was stricken. I was enveloped by fear, a really reasonable fear.
Yeah.
And also stricken that I didn't know this guy was even wounded. That one of my best guys is probably fatally wounded. And then my son is about to get killed helping him. But then also I felt ashamed that I was down there and he was up there. And I hadn't realized we had a living person up there still. I somehow missed that. I thought everybody had escaped the vehicle. So all those things at once. And I just went running back to Pete, feeling I was less than. Like Pete's standing really high and I'm low. I mean, literally and figuratively, until I got up to help him. You know, my fear never went away. I was like, man, we're still up here and the plane's diving now. But okay, now my son's in it. I'm in it with him. And we didn't get killed. But yeah, that was a intense moment. And I told people later, I know you guys know Pete's brave. He rides bulls. He climbs. He skydives. But he is really brave. And he's brave because of love.
Right.
That's why he was there. He wasn't trying to prove anything. He's just like, my buddy just got it, man. I got to try to save him. Anyway, you know, we learn from our kids. And oh, I'm grateful.
Yeah. Let me ask you if I can just drill one more level deep into you and Pete. The people you admire the most are the blood of your blood and flesh of your flesh and bone of your bone. The people that God literally used you and your wife to create, to serve him on this earth. And you wouldn't lay your life down any quicker for anybody on this planet than them. You have had to embody a lot of loss. And God has trusted you with that kind of suffering because the love is great. And you trust that the seed of love is one that will grow eternally and cannot be stopped. It will not be killed. even if death is what you have to go through to get to it, to that eternal life. So I see all those elements at play in you. And yet, you've talked about the issue of shame. How do you enter into and accept the sorrow and let it live full bore in your gut for a while before it's offered as a new burnt offering on the altar and not be swallowed by the shame? Like you say, you felt in that moment of seeing your son morally elevated over you when you didn't realize you were at a deficit. How do you turn to the shame and rebuke it when you're facing such intense loss and the accusations of others that say, Dave, you're a fool for bringing your children and your wife into this? I know that's come at you before.
Yes.
And people probably will continue to the rest of your life, which I know is deeply unfair, to call you cruel or foolish for doing something that is so fundamentally against the parental principle of preserving your children and your family for another day. But you put all of that on the altar, and you know that God has received your offering.
We'll be back with more right after this. And if you don't mind me saying so now, I hope this short message will stick with you as well. For you are essential to the mission of Compassion Radio. We truly cannot do it without you. Just call today with your gift and consider making it monthly. 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And our website is CompassionRadio.com. And now, back to our discussion.
To call you cruel or foolish for doing something that is so fundamentally against the parental principle of preserving your children and your family for another day. But you put all of that on the altar, and you know that God has received your offering. How do you face that shame that wells up or gets brought up by others that want to bring you down to defeat the God in you?
I think the first thing I say is, yeah, I should have done better. You're right. I should have been up there with him right at that moment. I had no idea that's what happened. Or other times, at that time, I don't really feel that bad about because I didn't really understand what was happening.
Right.
I was just like, oh, I thought you were alive. I thought no one was there. But I have another time, you know, normally because of, I think, the way I'm made and the choices I've made and God's grace and God's help for me, I usually go right into something. I mean, when I was young, I'd go right into a fight. That was not about love. That's just pride and love of action and violence. I just go right into it. I didn't care how big they were. I'd fight them. That was my nature, or I don't know what you want to call it.
Your drive.
But yeah. God's mercy and love took that and directed it to help others. That's kind of my norms. You can ask anyone who's been with me. Boom. Something goes boom. Shooting happens. I usually go right to it.
Right.
And God has given me the ability to kind of see what to do. And you mentioned calm earlier. I'm not a very calm person, but in combat, I find that I'm pretty calm, especially compared to a lot of people around me. It's not because I'm virtuous. It's just what God gave me. It's like, you know, you want the surgeon that's naturally calm. You can be an atheist and be calm. So I'm not saying that's a great virtue of my making.
It's a useful tool when you have it.
Very useful. So in combat, I can kind of see. I can be calm and make rational, calm decisions. You know, my kids are that way too. In fact, putting my daughter, Suzanne, our middle daughter, into vet school, I was talking with the dean just yesterday. And he said, you know, besides her sweetness and faith in God that she brings to the school and her international experience and war and animals, besides all that she brings, you know what she brings that our students need is calm. That's the word he used. She's calm. I was like, well, they are. In big action, they don't lose it. So whether it's climbing mountains, skydiving, bombs, bullets, whatever. Interpersonal fights, you know, they know how to be calm. So I normally run right to the problem or find out how to get to the problem, no matter what shooting's going on. But 3 years ago, we were surrounded by the Burma Army and did not know it. We had the Burma Army on three sides, and I knew that. We were hiding in the bushes, and when one of the resistance was shot, we'd run out and grab them, pull them back, and then go around this way to Akashi Collection Point. Me and a guy named Silverhorn and a few others. And I'm laying there in Silverhorn, and behind me is safe. There's nothing behind me. It's a safety area. I'm laying there, and bullets go over my head from behind and smack into the tree in front of me. I turned to hit Silverhorn and said, what idiot is shooting over our heads from behind at the enemy? Enemy's up ahead of me on two sides. And I turn my head, and it's a Burma Army battalion in extended line advancing less than 100 yards away shooting at us. And they're yelling, die, die, die. And we've been trapped. We've been surprised. Wow. the amount of fear that came over me, I don't think it's ever come over me like that. You know, I fought ISIS 2 yards away and shot them. 2 yards away wasn't as scary as this. And there's no escape. Now we're surrounded. Silverhorn looks at me and goes, what do we do, Thra? Thra means teacher. What do we do? I said, pray. I said, Jesus, help us. And I jumped up. I said, follow me. We ran at the other enemy. So now we're running zigzagging between these enemies. I'm trying to figure out the most likely way we'll surprise them and not get killed. And we end up in this huge open cornfield that's already been harvested. There's no cover. And it's 1 kilometer long, half a mile long, 300 yard wide. We're running down the long side of it. Now we're getting shot at from every side. I'm making for the trees and a gap that I know exists between the surrounding forces. I got to make that gap. But that is 1,000 yards away, which is forever. Yeah. Bullets are going all around me. 3 RPGs go over my head, rocket propelled grenades. And the 4th one goes over my head. Silverhorn's on my right side. But what I didn't realize, he's falling back a little bit because I'm running in every fold of terrain I can find. Nowhere in the world is perfectly flat. I'm looking for everything that's my advantage. Thinking as I'm running, he's here and somehow he drifts the other way. Looking for the same thing. We're picking different routes.
Yeah.
So he's about 20 yards from me. The rocket goes over me. I don't know this. Blows up. But many of those did that. So it's bullets everywhere. I'm just running. 1 goes over. The 4th one goes over. And I look and I don't see anybody. And I've gone like 40 yards now. I look back, probably 40 yards away is Silverhorn laying down. And I can't hear him because the fire is so intense. But he told me, he's saying, help me. And I can see his body coming up and he can't move. And I stood there. Normally, I would run right back. I stood there transfixed by fear and self-preservation. I am ashamed to say it. I've not done that before like that, ever. I stood there, and this is my friend who carried my daughter, Suzanne, when she was 2 years old in the camp years ago. And I'm hesitating to go back to help him because the volume of fire and the closing in of the enemy. And I just said, Jesus, help me. And, you know, I don't know. I could go back and look at it. But I'd say for at least 5 seconds, maybe 10 seconds, which is actually a long time, I stood there thinking, how am I going to go back and get him and not get killed? And finally, I walked. I did not run. I just set my face. I walked back. Oh, man. 40 yards is not very far, but it's far. Bullets everywhere. By the time I got to him, others saw me do that and came and helped me. Other guys, they just kept running. So I remember guys like Wildebeest running by me. And there were some other on our team that were caught like we were. They were following me. I didn't really know that. But when the other guys saw me go back, 2 more guys came. 3 more guys came. And help me pull Silverhorn. And now we're running with Silverhorn. He's a medic. And we run for 1 minute, just 1 minute. And he goes, I'm losing too much blood. Thra, if you don't stop the bleeding, I'll be dead. I've got a serious wound. He's saying this is we're dragging him, you know? Yeah. And there's bullets all still. And I said, we got to get to that tree and get in between the enemy. Otherwise, because the guys behind are still advancing, following.
And he's saying, no, it's now or never.
Yeah, now or never. And he goes, well, I'll be dead. So I pray. I'm carrying and pray. We go about 400 more yards. And I realize he's seen going pale. So I said, okay, drop him. You got 1 minute. And our other guys are stuffing gauze, and he's got a hole in his back that big, the size of a baseball. And he shot through the hip, too. I didn't know that right away. Shot through the hip, and he's got this hole in his back from the RPG shell. I turn back. We're trying to hold off the enemy, and the medics are working on him. 1 minute. I'm calling out 30 seconds. Yeah, 30 seconds. And then get him out to that. One chance we have is when we get there, I didn't tell you this part. I'm on the radio the whole time. Hey, someone help. And one of our vehicles comes through the gauntlet of fire. That little gap that I thought we could make, we made it, put him in the vehicle. Burma is shooting us like crazy. Everybody who can, we're shooting back. Silverhorn gets out. Silverhorn is then driven to the casualty collection point. My son, Peter, who was, I guess, 13 then, or maybe 15, whatever, drives him all night to the next field hospital. First to my daughter, Sahaley, who's still in college, but on summer break, she's working on him. And my whole family's involved in his care, along with our medics. And then he's out to, and Ilya, our chief medic here. I mean, I say these names because these are guys from the beginning, all there helping Silverhorn. 11-hour surgery that night in a jungle hiding hospital. It's been already been bombed. They're in hiding. Silverhorn is safe. He's alive today.
Wow.
So when it was over, Silverhorn's story was David Eubank, Thawapa, that's my Burma name, came back and saved my life. I love him so much. He's the greatest guy. And then his kids helped me. You know, his daughter, Suzanne, Sahaley and Sue and his wife were there helping at the casualty collection points. And then his son, Peter, drove me all night long, you know. And I said, Silverhorn, that's all true, but it's not the whole truth. And I started crying when I told them. I hesitated, man. I hesitated. I looked at you. I'm so sorry. I hesitated. Maybe 5 seconds, maybe longer. I have to think about it. But I hesitated to go back to save you. Oh, man, you wouldn't hesitate for me, but I did. I'm so sorry. Oh, it's the only time I've ever done that. I was overcome by fear. And he said, but Dave, you came and got me. Whew. So, you know, Bram, to this day, I'm sorry I hesitated, but it's just who I am. I'm not that good. But I thank God that he allowed me and helped me go save Silverhorn. I wasn't the only one. Other guys helped me on my team, including another foreigner who was with me. And I think one other guy showed up at the end running for the other direction. A guy named Noah and a guy named Greg and some of my ethnic guys. So I say that story because that's something I'm still sorry I did. But it also shows, okay, I'm not that great. I'm just a weak person sometimes. Sometimes I'm strong. Sometimes I'm weak. But Jesus is strong all the time. That's why I follow him, not me. That's why I surrender him. I don't want to surrender to me. He's the only reliable one.
You're coping well with the reality of what the shame felt like to you, but also the reality of what Jesus knows about it for you and how he's released you. And I'll just remind our Compassion Radio listeners of the truth that gives me a lot of strength too when the shame comes up for me for other things. I worship a God who came to save me, who hesitated too. If Jesus can look at the cross and draw back from that to the point where his own blood vessels are bursting and weeping, it's okay to have doubts. I marvel at a God who looked up to David Eubank in the future and said, he needs me to get through this. So he got through it too.
I never thought of that. Thank you. Oof. So you asked about the kids. You know, the kids were all there in that battle. They weren't in the front line. And since the kids were born, we had to decide if we could take them with us or not. Because all the ethnics, as soon as my kids were born, we already been in Burma for 7 years. They know, everybody knows us. And they had their kids there too. And they're like, you have kids now? Bring them to uncle. Bring them to auntie. Bring them to grandmother. That's what they call our kids. Karen and I were discussing, okay, we have this newborn coming. We take them to Burma. They could die of malaria, you know, boat accident, get shot, get bombed. What are we thinking as parents? And Karen said, we shouldn't be led by all the bad things that could happen. We should be led by the good things that are happening. Yes. And the good things are happening. We have a child to live together. We have ethnic people in Burma who will love this child and want to see this child. That's sure. The other things are just maybes. And so we pray about every decision. We don't want to be led by pride, by comfort, or by fear.
Or false humilities.
And we go in those opportunities. We try our best to take care of our children. And thank God, they're all three alive. They've had malaria, typhus, typhoid, diseases. They've all been shot at, all these things. But, you know, just like the little girls in Texas, they were in the safest place.
Yeah.
Was that irresponsible to send them there? No. The parents were doing the best they could do. My friend whose daughter died in the safety chair. None of us get out of this world alive. So it isn't a matter of trying to preserve yourself. It's a matter of serving God, surrendering even your children to him, and then doing your best to preserve them in that. And so I thank God that our kids are alive. I've never taken them purposely where I thought they're going to get hurt, ever, ever.
Right.
Now, things happen around us, but if I know they're going to ambush this road, I'm not going to take my kids there. I'm going to go another way. I thank God they're alive. And they've learned the most important lessons of life, which is surrender to Jesus. Don't surrender to something else. And love each other and forgive each other and make this world with God's help the best you can while you're on it. And don't throw your life away.
Yep. Whether I live or whether I die in all this, Christ, real life right there.
Greater love has no man than this, that he laid down
We'll be back with more of the latest from Dave Eubank of the Free Burma Rangers. As these programs go to air, Dave, his family, and a team of volunteers are embedded at the front lines of the Ukraine war, looking for ways to save lives, support those who do, and speak courage and grace into the suffering church there. Please keep them under your prayers, and thank you for supporting this ministry so that we can keep you informed and at the very center of kingdom action around the world. We can't do it without you. Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And our website is CompassionRadio.com. We'll see you tomorrow.